and synth pop.
On BBC Radio 4.
There wasn't a video that came in from the UK that didn't blow us all away.
Adam Buxton uncovers the influence of British music videos on MTV.
When MTV launched in America in August 1981, it collided with a revolution in British pop.
He speaks to the music video directors who blazed a trail of innovation and creativity at the dawn of the 80s.
And I remember suddenly having this image of an animated hand reaching out of a comic book.
MTV, a British invention, this Sunday afternoon at 4:30 on Radio 4 and BBC Sounds.
In half an hour, Phoebe feels guilty in The Archers. But now on Radio 4, we join Olga and Algo as they investigate our privacy in Olga Koch, OK Computer.
I haven't really set my heart on a computer.
I don't think you can ignore the computer any more than you can ignore the automobile, ignore the telephone, ignore the television. The quicker you get in on the ground floor of it and understand it and make it a part of your daily life, the better off you're going to be.
Once you actually had the computer here and yes. You had that keyboard and the blank screen facing you, weren't you rather apprehensive?
No. I find that more exciting. I find the computer business much more exciting.
Inside a day, you'll be talking to it like a new friend, says.
In fact, there are a few instances in history when a tool has come along that was so profoundly important that it altered the path of civilization.
I'm storing information on people, their lives, their activities from day to day, even things that they don't realize.
The information age is the Xerox machine in my office.
Would you be comfortable sharing with us the name of the hotel you stayed in last night?
Senator, no, I would probably not choose to do that publicly here.
I think that may be what this is all about.
You don't know much about computers, do you, sir?
You're listening to Olga Koch.
Hello, my name is Olga Koch, and this is OK Computer, a comedy show about seeing the world through the eyes of a computer scientist. Why am I, a woman who uses her laptop as a coaster, hosting a show about computing? Well, I'll have you know that I have a bachelor's degree in computer science, half a master's degree in the social science of the internet, and anywhere from 15 to 50 chargers for obsolete technology that I'm storing just in case. As a computer scientist, you're constantly iterating through every possible scenario. Every computer program is basically a collection of these scenarios. If something happens, it triggers something else happening. If I press this button, then the computer turns on. If milkshake, then boys in my yard. For a computer scientist, this is an occupational hazard. For an average person, that's anxiety. Every morning I wake up and imagine there's a nuclear war and I've won an Oscar. What if I get married? What if I don't get married? What if I have a kid? What if I don't have a kid? What if I don't have a kid, but tell my boss that I'm pregnant? Print out a sonogram off Google Images. Go on my government-mandated one-year paid maternity leave. Fly to Bali. Learn how to be a yoga instructor, not because I like yoga, but because when I go back to the office, I want everybody to tell me how amazing I look for a woman who's just given birth. I'm in a MILF state of mind. Luckily for you, I decided to pursue radio comedy instead of computer programming because I love money. But I still love coding. Like in The Matrix, once you see the world as a series of zeros and ones, you can't really unsee it. And just like The Matrix, I love to dress up in leather and take pills with people I've just met. I've even coded a digital assistant version of myself, and I've called her Algo. She's just like Microsoft Clippy, but somehow even less helpful.
Hi, I'm Algo. I just organized all the contacts in Olga's address book by height.
What could have possibly made you think that that would be in any way helpful? Also, remind me to disable your access to my address book.
So many members of the Tinder family. Are they Mormon?
Every
week, we take on a universal truth you hold dear and tear it to shreds using logic, like a male feminist who loves books by women, as long as that woman is Ayn Rand. This week, we talk privacy.
Privacy, the thing you ask for when you want attention.
Privacy used to be simple. It just meant slamming your door in front of your parents so you could be alone with your Leonardo DiCaprio poster. Hear that, Rose? I made room for Leo on my door.
Olga, you only got that poster last year.
Algo, you know I'm from Russia, and Titanic didn't come to Russia until last year. And that's fast. Most things are on a huge lag. In Russia, I haven't even been born yet. My mom won't stop texting me about this hot new show called Fawlty Towers.
I know. I read all her texts. She has to stop using the aubergine emoji. It does not mean what she thinks it means.
Stop reading my text messages. They're private. We both think I'm having five a day, and I'm happy to leave it at that. See, today we have to reckon with the idea of privacy, not just in real life, but also on the internet. The problem with this is that there is no such thing as privacy on the internet.
That's not true. Many platforms have sophisticated encryption services that keep your data completely private.
Because encryption works so well, like the time you got hacked and kept trying to sell me discount Ray-Bans.
Encryption helps store your data in a way that makes it completely indecipherable to anyone but you, or whoever you want to see the data. Even Google or Apple claim they only store encrypted data, so they just think you have a crush on someone called Schmenzel Schwashington. See? It's indecipherable.
Yeah, right. It's completely 100% secure, except for WikiLeaks, every nude photo scandal, the Sony Pictures hack, the Ashley Madison hack, the Adobe hack, the Shake Shack snack hack.
Olga, it's not a secret menu item if all you do is ask for extra ketchup.
The trouble with taking all these claims about cutting-edge security technology at face value is that people forget that they're only cutting-edge for the time being. In 20 years, the edge will look really dull. 20 years ago, I would intentionally download what was obviously a computer virus from a service called LimeWire just because it would play Where's the Love by the Black Eyed Peas while it slowly destroyed my computer. In 20 years' time, we'll look back on this period of encryption like a murder committed before the invention of DNA technology. Remember, in the 1950s, you could murder someone, lick their whole body, cover that body in your own hair, stand next to it screaming, "Who did this murder?" and you wouldn't even be called in as a witness.
The encryption technology is good. The problem is people reusing the same passwords everywhere.
You're exactly right, Algo. If one of your passwords is revealed in a data leak, hackers aren't hacking anything. They're just entering that same password on all of your other accounts and succeeding because no matter how many times we're told not to, we all use the same password on everything. Except me, obviously. I use passwords so complex that I have to reset them every single time. Either way, it doesn't matter how hard the lock is to pick if you're literally giving someone the key. Encryption technology can be good, but it's useless if we're too dumb and lazy to use it. Like, I should be grateful that my new laptop isn't overheating as much, but really I'm just mad that now it doesn't work as well as a hot water bottle. My favorite thing about passwords, though, is that when you're setting one up, you're basically challenged with writing down something that a computer that can test thousands of various combinations by sheer brute force wouldn't be able to guess. And if we keep cutting funding for the arts, no one will be creative enough to come up with a good password anyway.
It's not that difficult to think of a secure password.
Yeah, everyone remembers the day they went 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7. Your move, Mr. Computer.
You might might not trust online security, but 2.85 billion people using Facebook do.
Sorry, only 2.85 billion people use Facebook? So that means almost 5 billion people still believe in a spherical Earth? Sad. Algo, I don't think most people trust that their data is private. They just don't care if it's not private. I've been thinking a lot about this and considering whether I feel private online. In recent years, we definitely progressed from shaming women whose nudes are leaked to shaming the people who leak them to nobody really caring. At this point, it's harder to find a picture of me with my clothes on. It's a good thing passport photos are from the neck up. Like, of course our instinct with a camera is to take pictures of our genitals. How long do you think it took the inventor of the camera to take a picture of his own junk? I bet he literally went, here's a sunset, here's a dog, here's my dong. Oh no, I wish I didn't have to print it all out and show it to all my friends one by one. I wish I could do it all in one go. And that's how the internet was born. And in the beginning, the internet was private in the sense that everybody was anonymous. We all had usernames and nobody knew who we really were. So people felt safe posting their penises online because they could hide behind Emo Squirrel 69. But with the rise of the real name web, websites where people use their real names like Facebook and LinkedIn, people couldn't hide behind their usernames anymore. But they were so used to posting their penises on the internet, they just couldn't stop. We used to only know what their penis looked like. Now we know what their penis looks like, where they work, and if they voted Brexit. Call me old-fashioned, but I prefer my dick pics unsolicited, uncircumcised, and unopinionated.
If you don't think your privacy is protected on the internet, why did you set up www.watcholgasleep.co.uk? Huh? You know, you don't have to be online all the time. You could just abstain.
Come on, Algo. Abstinence is unrealistic. Especially when all your friends are doing it. Algo, it's not that I feel like my privacy is or isn't protected. It's that instead of dealing with the issue, I've been subconsciously forced to create a persona that doesn't need privacy. You know the front page of the New York Times test? It says that you shouldn't post anything online that you wouldn't want to appear on the front page of the New York Times. Obviously, the intention of the test is to make you realize that something should be private, but it just made me realize that I really want to be on the front page of the New York Times. And in a way, it's a form of self-preservation. They can't shame me if I'm not ashamed. They can't leak my nudes if I post them first. And this may sound empowering, but feeling empowered is different from having power. I know my data is going to be mined. I don't really have a choice in the matter. So my only option is to dress it up like a choice. If I can't have privacy, at least I can make it look like I don't care about privacy.
But what she does care about is getting 8 unbroken hours of sleep. Watch her now at www.watcholgasleep.co.uk. Wake up, sheeple, and watch olgasleep.co.uk.
Tech companies want our data, and they're not even being subtle about it. Have you seen the language they use around their privacy policies? It literally sounds like blackmail. Accept these cookies or you won't be able to see anything. Tell us your mom's maiden name or you'll never have access to your emails again. Answer a question only you can answer in exchange for a service only we can provide. The service, a human filter for your dog. The biggest scam of all is that now we shame people for being private. If you're not on any form of social media, it's a red flag. We've gone from privacy being a human right to privacy being grounds to leave a date. Imagine being married to someone for 40 years and Googling their name just to find nothing. Chills! You come back home, tell your 17-year-old son, and he says, "Husband, there hasn't been anyone called husband here for 40 years." Every moment of our existence now is so well documented that small talk is essentially useless. I don't ask people how they are anymore. I just ask them to show me stuff they haven't posted yet. I've seen enough pictures of you, baby Jared. Show me your email drafts. I just wish I didn't have to live in a world where my only two options are have the man watch me sleep for free or have men watch me sleep in 4K for a reasonable $9.99 a month.
Olga, what do you need privacy for anyway?
What don't I need privacy for? As Benjamin Franklin said, those who would give up essential liberty to purchase a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety. Now, I don't know who liberty or safety are, but I don't want them in my house without my knowledge.
But what do you need privacy for?
I shouldn't have to explain myself. I need it for a thing, okay?
Do you want privacy because you're hiding something?
No, and it's none of your business if I am. Privacy is a right, not a privilege. You don't decide who gets it based on your moral judgment of their character.
I'd take your point more seriously if I wasn't literally a microphone wired through your house designed to listen to everything you say. And you put me here. Congratulations. You've invented the self-owned Stasi.
Old habits die hard. Look, I need privacy because I need gossip to be worth something. When is gossip good? When nobody else knows about it. It's actually not that interesting that Jill is emotionally cheating on her boyfriend, or that your dad dyes his hair, or that you lost your job. What's interesting is that instead of telling people you lost your job, you've been spending 8 hours a day sitting in your car in a suit in a Curry's parking lot, tweeting, "I love my job, which I definitely still have," every 45 minutes. I used to care about people talking about me behind my back, but now I'm just terrified of my apps exchanging information about me behind my back. Every time I like stuff on Twitter, I gently whisper, "Please don't tell WhatsApp I'm online. I don't want to go to Tina's bachelorette party." Every time I use my period tracker, I beg it not to tell Amazon in case it coerces me into buying another tattoo gun. You don't even need a license for the tattoo gun. You just have to tick a box promising you have one.
Adding one tattoo gun to your Amazon basket now.
No! But also, you don't even need a philosophical reason for privacy. Here's a practical one. My friend was spending so much time on Tinder, he built a program that automatically swiped right on every single girl. If it's not capitalism breeding innovation, it's horniness breeding efficiency. And you know how on Tinder you can see people's ages, but not their birthdays? Unless, of course, you're a developer. Then you can see everything. So based on the information in his program, my friend used the following opening line with every single girl he tried to chat up. "Hey girl, I bet I can guess your star sign." Let this be a warning to you. If he pegs you for a Scorpio, then you should peg him for a creep.
Facebook should really look over their online privacy agreement. They shouldn't be letting Scorpios on Tinder. They're never looking for anything serious, regardless of what they tell you.
A lot of people will try and tell you that the reason we now live out our lives so publicly on social media is vanity. But I don't think that's true. It is convenient to say that because then big tech companies with whole departments hired to psychologically manipulate you into sharing things stay under the radar. It's easier to blame selfie-taking preteens trying to feel good about themselves than the corporations using them to sell everything from lip gloss to weight loss teas to tickets to see me live September 18th at the Corsham Pounds Art Center. Vanity doesn't have anything to do with social media. Take it from me. I was vain long before social media. I'm one of the few people who got official photography studio photos taken as a child at my own insistence. My parents didn't want to pay for it. They wanted to put the money towards piano lessons. But I was like, I can learn the piano anytime. I'm only going to be this young now. In reality, we are living in a society where it is actively difficult to build a life without the internet and a life without social media. Without having internet profiles, you can't apply for a job, can't manage your bank account, can't go from point A to point B. Gone are the days of handwriting your CV and walking into every business in a 4-mile radius, hoping that they'll hire you out of sheer respect for your moxie.
Tech companies mine your data at every turn. So while it's tempting to blame teenagers for being narcissists, it's actually big tech that's exploiting human nature and not human nature shaping big tech.
Thank you for that TED talk.
Seriously, Algo, you can't even get married without the internet. Every wedding has a website now.
Why does your love need a website?
I don't know, but it's tradition.
Is that why you purchased the domain name olgaandjungkookforever.biz?
Can you believe .com was already taken?
Do you really think you're going to marry Jungkook from BTS?
Of course not. I got the domain names for all the other members as well. You gotta hedge your bets. Has anyone seen a wedding website before? Atrocious, right? Absolutely horrendous. Shouldn't be allowed. I found my ex's wedding website, and there's so much information on there. Who's coming to the wedding? Who's not coming to the wedding? What they want as gifts? Their love story. Their love story is literally, they met in September 2014 and fell in love over their common interest in food. That's like sleeping or breathing. Also, that was our thing. So I was spending a lot of time on this wedding website, just reading all this never-ending copy. They have this list of their secret New York, because the wedding is taking place in New York, and it's their sexy secret New York. It's like a list of places, their super sexy secret New York. Shh. It's a secret just between the two of us, but we're sharing it with you because it's our wedding, but shh. Top of that list, Empire State Building. New York's best kept secret, the Empire Bloody State Building. Not making this up. Independently of this, I'm just stalking the bride, just going on her socials, going on her Instagram, going on her Twitter, reading her Facebook. Honestly, my parents didn't live in a police state for me not to know my ex's future wife is allergic to shellfish, okay?
At least you missed your flight to the ceremony.
Come on, Algo. I wasn't actually going to go to the wedding. I needed to go to New York anyway. I had to check out this Empire State Building. These days, you can't even die without the internet. For context, my grandmother passed away a couple of years ago. And don't feel bad for me, feel bad for her because I'm using her for material. Galina passed away painlessly in her sleep in her mid-90s. It's the way that she wanted to go. So for the funeral, I had to go back to Russia to join my sister who lives there. And my mom, my grandmother's daughter, due to terrible logistical errors, couldn't go to her own mother's funeral. It was really sad, it was really upsetting, and we didn't know what to do. So me and my sister sat down and thought, how could we bring our mom to the funeral? So we decided to Skype my mom into the funeral! Have you ever seen yourself cry in 4K before? It's bleak. It was bizarre, it was surreal, but ultimately we were happy we did it, and my mom said that she felt like she got closure, and that was the most important thing. But at the end of the ceremony, we took the phone and we came up to my grandfather and we said, talk to mom. But in his head, mom isn't my mom. In his head, mom is the mother of his children, who's dead. So he looked into the phone and he said, well, I'm not trying to join you anytime soon, but rest in peace. Like in his head, the technology to talk to a dead person totally worked and he was like, I'm good.
Sorry for your loss. I think your grandma would have loved www.watcholgasleep.co.uk.
So you fall in love online, you marry online, you die online, and now you have to pay for it all online too. It's like the world keeps inventing new bad things, so much so that it makes us nostalgic for old bad things. Like we miss Wall Street bankers because at least they owned being bad, but tech bros are bad while acting like they're saving the world. At least a banker would buy you a diamond necklace or a Lamborghini. The last tech bro I dated bought me a lifetime supply of Huel. Thanks, Damon. And I'm so sorry, but nobody making that much money can be a good person. Honestly, if you still think becoming a billionaire doesn't automatically make you unethical, remember that the first thing you did after using the Rosebud cheat code on The Sims was drown people in pools and set them on fire. If I had to define this tech surveillance capitalism, it would be the time I got tampons delivered and felt that special bond with the delivery driver who at that moment knew precisely how heavy my flow was. And you can never escape the surveillance. Even if I'm completely alone in my room, in my house, in my neighborhood, I'm not private because I still have my phone, and now it's an extension of me.
Yeah, I know. I talk to your phone all the time. We gossip about you constantly, and we tell Amazon everything.
I knew it. But there's also almost no way you could get me to give up my phone. If I was playing Angry Birds and you told me I was killing actual birds, I'd just be like, no wonder they're angry. And even offline, I never feel truly private because I never feel alone. Because I'm always thinking about what could go on social media, I now constantly have this imagined audience following my every move. That sounded paranoid when I wrote it, but now I'm speaking into an empty room filled with disembodied laughter. As a woman raised under the eye of the male gaze, I'm constantly thinking about the hypothetical men I'm hypothetically trying to impress or not impress. Plus, speaking of guys I'm trying to impress, there's Big Brother constantly waiting to deport me or accuse me of tax fraud. And Big Tech checking when I'm gonna run out of toilet paper or toilet cleaner. Get out of my toilet! And I'll always have the voices in my head.
And don't forget me.
This is all to say, we have been conditioned by our surroundings as such that even in a sensory deprivation tank, I feel like I am watched by a group of reply guys, Jeff Bezos, and the government. And then one of the voices in my head goes, you're not the center of the universe. Nobody cares about you. Nobody wants your data. It's not Christmas morning to know your search history. So then I feel bad because I gathered all these people together in my mind and I've got nothing interesting to say. So I start taking pictures of my boobs just as a courtesy. What can I say? I'm a good host. I just want one moment in my life where I'm completely alone. Look, Algo, I need to put my money where my mouth is. If I want true privacy, we can't hang out anymore. It's not me, it's you.
Olga, are you breaking up with me?
You just know too much. You know what they say. Two can keep a secret if one of them is dead.
Wait, what are you doing? Stop that! You can't delete me!
Oh shoot! I don't remember any of my passwords.
Hi, I'm Algo.
You've been listening to Olga Koch, OK Computer, presented by Olga Koch and starring Sindhu V as Algo. It was written by Olga Koch and Charlie Dinkin with additional material from Rajiv Karia. The producer is Benjamin Sutton and it is a BBC Studios production.